Hello and welcome to the GFW Radio Podcast. This is the podcast for October 31st, 2006. Happy Halloween, everybody. We are podcasting at 10 a.m. in the morning. Normally, we podcast in the late afternoon. And none of us, I don't think, are actually morning people.
I am.
Oh, Darren is. Yeah, that's right. You're up like I am at 5 a.m. So we'll have to see what our energy level is like here. But we have a ton to talk about today. A lot of new games, some controversy with the WoW trading card game, some talk about our own scoring system. We got a lot to go on.
And a radio play.
We have a radio drama for you later today. And I'm joined here today. This is Jeff Green, the editor-in-chief, and I'm joined here by the crew of GFW, which is
Ryan Scott,
Darren Gladstone,
Grandpa Sean, you kids.
So that was Sean.
Sean Malloy.
Man, if you're a grandpa, I don't know what that makes me. It makes me like dead.
You're like the Crypt Keeper.
Yeah, Crypt Keeper Green. We've had a busy week here. Notice I haven't said anything but GFW this entire podcast. I haven't blown it yet. I'm not going to say those old three acronyms are the three letters. So, we have had two big new PC games come out this week. I'm sorry, games for Windows come out this week. both highly anticipated by us. One of them was on our cover previously. Mm-hmm. The other one, we've had kind of mixed feelings going into it all along, but still a totally AAA title that we were genuinely psyched to play, and we've now reviewed them both, the two games being Dark Messiah of Might and Magic and Battlefield 2142, and, you know, we can talk about the scores in a minute, but the games themselves, you know, we've all been playing them or trying to play them, and maybe a little bit not exactly what we were expecting, huh?
Yeah.
All the way around. Have we all played or tried to play both of these?
Tried
games?
To play is the key. I guess we should talk about Dark Messiah first because we've talked about less often in the podcast. Yeah. I mean, that would come up, I think, in the context of the score.
Yeah.
That'd be worth talking about.
Agreed.
But yeah, for Jeff and I, the issue has been tried to play Dark Messiah because for whatever reasons, we both have more or less the same, you know, configurations on our rigs here.
Yeah.
And they just do not go well with Dark Messiah, no matter what we do to the settings, you know, update every driver,
yep,
you know, turn things to the lowest, to the highest,
yep,
to the mid-range,
so,
and every combination thereof, and we basically get... Darren, yeah, you can fill in the blanks because you've actually played it,
yeah,
but what happens
I gotta,
is...
I gotta ask him, am I the only person on staff that's been able to actually play this game right now?
Yeah, you are.
I think so,
yeah. And on your home PC only.
Yeah.
So for us...
you can't play it here either.
No, I have the same...
We actually have, like, the stopwatch stuff. I mean, you sat there and you got your watch out.
I did.
And you timed the loading. And
I did.
And you're definitely looking at, like, 10 to 15 minutes, which... I mean, we're used to saying, hey, I'll be there in 10 minutes. And, you know, as a figure of speech, it's a very... small amount of time, but when you're sitting there for an actual 10 minutes, you're looking at, like, you know, you could read however many pages, do however many other things, check however much email, and then when the game loads and it's like, you know, welcome to Max Headroom, or, you know, Pee Wee, like, good morning,
Pee Wee, the sound,
dark time.
Okay, first of all,
drag,
wicked.
Yeah, the sound stuttering has been horrible. Yeah, I think we were all joking the day that we were having all that trouble that our review was going to be four stars because we couldn't freaking play the thing.
Right.
And then the sound stuttering.
It wasn't just the sound. I mean, it was like the game is playing at about 3 to 15 frames per second, and the three being anytime you move the mouse, even when you're on rails on the horseback, which is
like the Half-Life horse tram ride.
Right. You start off on the Half-Life horse tram ride, and
I
you try to look to your
right,
and it's like... down to 3 frames per second.
Right. The great thing is when you're off the horse and then you, like, move, but, like, the movement catches up with you, like, 2 minutes later, and then you realize you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're back to your 10-minute load time for the level.
And I think it's worth complaining about this for us because we're clearly not alone. You see the exact identical complaints in internet land. We tried on different PCs, right, with different types, with different companies, you know, processors. Yeah.
We're not running archaic PCs here.
Right. But I mean, at home, you've got a whole other rig.
I do.
Have the same problems.
Actually,
same
problem. I got to ask, on your home machine, are you using an AMD processor?
Yes.
Now, see, I'm trying to figure out what the problem is, because I mean, granted, that my home machine I built from like the motherboard up, mm-hmm, I have an Intel rig, and mm-hmm, it's working perfectly. I mean, actually, like, it loads really quickly, and I did a disk install, and then I did the Steam install afterwards, and actually I found the Steam install is working smoother now than mm-hmm, before. I can't figure out for the life of me why it is that only my machine at home.
It's
that I
not
built.
Just the AMD, because I know someone who's got an AMD also, and the same 7800 GTX cards that we were using here. And
well, I'm using an ATI. I'm using Intel and AMD.
Right, and it works. But no, it works fine. It works fine.
Oh, ATI.
Right. So,
yeah.
So, what's it like to play it?
Well, I mean, it's actually okay. It starts off kind of like, you know, obviously very linear in the beginning. Kind of leads you, you know, holds your hand leading you into stuff, and unfortunately, that's kind of leads into a problem. I can't really go to this. Here's the ironic part. I just got diagnosed with tendonitis, so I can't play that much of the game.
So the one guy who can't play physically.
I'm actually benched right now. I did get about 3 missions in before my finger locked up. So actually, as a quick aside and public service message, kids, take a break from playing computer games every once in a while, because you'll end up like me. I'm actually seeing a doctor about it. So. Fun. No, but
hey, can you get Workman's Comp for that?
I sure hope so. I hope Corp is listening. no, but as far as I played into the game, I do have to take issue with one thing that Tom Schick brought up in his review, and this is like a kind of a central point for him.
Yeah,
is that you can like kick your way through the entire game,
mm-hmm,
and you know what? I did not find in the first few levels I was able to play that I was able to just stomp on people to death. I mean, yeah, you kick people into spike walls or into mm-hmm obstacles, but I mean that's part of the game. Mm-hmm. I personally like the hand-to-hand combat better than I did in Oblivion. It feels more action-based. And then,
which it should be.
Which it should
it's
be.
An action
it's an action
exactly.
Yeah, right.
And
that's like the one thing it definitely has no excuse not
right
to do better.
I don't think they're trying to go for an RPG element, an RPG game. I think it has some elements. But the one thing that, Sean, before we started the podcast, you brought up, and I totally agree with, is that instead of like getting experience-based, like, you know, level up abilities, you kind of get skill points as soon as you hit, you walk over this invisible marker in the sand, hit mm-hmm a checkpoint, and
right
then
as opposed to because you've mm-hmm killed
exactly,
you know, 50 trolls that
I want to be able to say
troll hut or
it's like if I unlock
it's like a Doom end of level.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the thing is, I wish there's like some ability for me to be able to say, okay, I killed the Cyclops in a really freaking cool way that no one else thought of. We're going to throw an extra 5 skill points
right
because you earned them.
Instead, it's pretty much like
right
you're picking up the BFG. But you get a few choices. You know,
right
there's like the BF spell and the BF sword or mm-hmm whatever. And you just get to choose which one of those you're
right
going to use.
But there's no point in giving all those choices if there's no reward for them, is there? Well, I don't know. Every shooter always has its array
right
of
it right
has its armory. But in this game, it seemed like, I agree with you, you're right, it would have been cool if you got rewarded for mm-hmm your creativity.
And the expectation.
Whereas, I keep thinking of like Deus Ex kind of stuff where like they would like, you'd find whole other ways to play and you got like, you know, depending on your actions, you were getting
yeah
additional experience points.
The game's subtitle is Might and Magic, as you were pointing out earlier, so the expectation is for it to, you know, while it's a different genre and a new direction for the franchise, that there are certain things you'd expect if it's going to have that. And
I wonder if that was a mistake then. I mean, granted, they're taking the lore of the Might and Magic universe, but maybe it puts too many expectations in that RPG side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, they're awesome. Really, in a way, not using the lore. It's sort of like its own story. But by using that name, they're, you know, they lump themselves together with this 20-year-old RPG franchise.
Mm, right.
So maybe a lot of people, especially like younger people, don't even know the Might and Magic game, so there won't be any baggage. But there's probably some people buying it thinking they're going to get some kind of RPG-ish experience.
Right.
And it's a very superficial one. But it's certainly a different step from what you get from your most FPS games.
Mm-hmm.
But it's no Thief or whatever.
It's tough for me because I wanted to play this thing.
I still want to play
the day it came
yeah
out. But it's like every day we hear something, we hear more and more about it. And I hear so many things about it that now it's gonna, like when I finally, I'm already like, you know, biased against it. And I say that I'm not reviewing it or anything. So I'm already biased against it because of the grief I've endured just to try to get
right
it to work.
We'll face it.
And now I've heard
yeah
so much, so many, you know, negative things about it that when I finally do, you know, it's like when I finally do get it running, and I'm like, do I really want to sit down for 20 hours of this when
yeah
everyone's already warned me that, like...
Well, it's really impossible
because
to have a decent impression.
Because the story stuff, some other, you know, people really complain about that. And I
yeah
heard through the Max Headroom audio, the woman, you know, like the dark whatever witch in your ear.
Cortana.
And that was just like horrendous. I mean, I just wanted to gag as soon as she started talking.
You know, actually, there was one part that kind of annoyed me in the beginning that I just remembered. Early on, I don't know if you, during your slideshow, if you came across this part where you go up through the barn, you jump across a rope, and you meet this guard who's helping you escape, mm-hmm. and he says, close the portcullis. And you're like, okay, where do I go? And I'm looking around, and if you don't find this one lever to pull...
I found that fine. I was going at 4 frames a second, though, so I might have had more time.
It was like one of those funny things where, like...
I'm like looking at a painting, so you've had ample opportunity.
Okay, that's what I was wondering, because, like, the first time I played, I was like, okay, where the hell is this thing?
Yeah.
Instead of finding the lever on the wall, I actually ran down that corridor and tried looking into it.
That's tough, though, because would you have preferred that they made it a giant flashing portcullis with an arrow above it?
Actually, I got to that scene, and I would have liked it, except because I did the same thing as you and I didn't find it right away. Then it was game over, mm-hmm. and then it was a 6-minute load time again. Screw this game.
That's the problem with those situations. Is like, I mean, on the one side, the sin I think is to just beat you over the head with it, and you have the, you know, in some of EA's, you know, mass market like Bond games and whatnot, mm-hmm. where everything is just like. You're basically just following on-screen directions the entire game.
Well,
it's like a new version of Dragon's Lair or something.
Well, my problem was
and
so
on the other
the
end,
editor.
Though, is what Jeff's saying. If you can get it so that you have the option to fail and you can continue to play despite that failure, although with more, you know, with whatever consequence.
That's what I'm saying. I don't like
the 6-minute load time.
That's exactly
it. No, it didn't help at all.
I kicked a guard, a friendly guard, and it's the
game
same
over.
Thing. It's just game over immediately.
That's exactly the thing. That was what was bothering me, is that it wasn't so much they needed a flashing light over it. I wanted to just be able to say, okay, I missed the portcullis. Some guy dies. The game's over? Can you give me a little bit more to work with?
Right, exactly.
Let me try to explain to the guard that I confused the nerve that goes to my foot with the nerve I thought that was going to go to my my mouth to say something, i.e. the difference between F and E.
I mean, I got some crap when I wrote the column about games, you know, about it being okay for games to be easy or whatever. But this, to me, does seem like a 1986 game convention that they just immediately smack you to the game over screen. You know, it doesn't have to be that unforgiving. Mm-hmm. There could have been ways, and you're right, I'm completely biased by the load time. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to ever die in this game because I don't want to wait 6 minutes.
So painful.
But even if you take the load time away, it's like, geez, you know, you could punish me without reloading the whole frickin' level.
Give me a different experience.
Especially when there's no hints, there's nothing to know that thing is going to cause a game over, like kicking an NPC.
Right.
You know, couldn't he just say, like, hey, kick me again and you're...
Yeah,
you know.
Or just club me and take away 20 health or something, you know? Like,
right.
That's why, I mean, it remains to be seen whether or not they deliver on it, but Crytek making Crysis are insisting that every single option is of that variety in the game, where mm-hmm. you can, if you miss some kind of timing-based thing or if you fail to do this or that, you always continue playing. The only game over scenario ever is player death.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that includes the death of, you know, NPC escorts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to completely bag on the game because I haven't been able to play it.
Right.
I could end up
loving it, you know, once
got
I
to
get
this
it.
Lever, which doesn't sound very exciting.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping I can still run it eventually.
I did see this morning, which I was wondering the whole time, because I was like, had I, you know, went out and purchased this game, I would be irate and I'd want my money back, you know, and I found someone on the Quarter to Three forums this morning was saying that they did the exact same thing and to Valve because they got it over Steam and they refunded his money.
Well, that's the bottom line to me. It's like, it's easy enough for us to be patient and wait for a patch, or Sean, you were even talking on the phone with the developers themselves. Yeah, I mean, you had the luxury of being able to do that, even though they couldn't help
you. Instead of waiting on a helpline for an hour, I was talking to
you. You were talking to the actual developers who actually couldn't help you, so that's a bad sign.
Yeah, he was trying to, you know, recreate the scenario.
But what if you were some schnook who bought it at, I'm sorry, not schnook, those are our loyal readers, but if you were somebody who bought the game at GameSpot and spent your
came home, you took
GameSpot,
the effort to go
GameStop. Sorry. Not a plug for that website. And you paid your money and you were facing the problems we were, I'd want to throw a brick through my
monitor.
Yeah,
I would be done with it. I would just take it back. And
no, but one thing I was kind of curious about, yesterday when you were talking to the guys at Arkane, mm-hmm. didn't you say like their last build before they submitted to retail, for going gold, mm-hmm. it was working fine, and then was it like copy protection that was screwing it up, or was there some kind of
that's what they were trying to say,
They don't know. I mean, obviously they're very sincerely, you know, upset by the whole thing.
Of course, no one wants to
lose
their crap.
And they were, you know, they were saying that the last version they had prior to the release, everything ran fine. They hadn't had any of these kind of issues.
Yeah, no trouble with the demo.
But you know, so they weren't saying it was the copy protection, but they were just saying all we can do is isolate the changes between the last iteration and the iteration that shipped, and among those differences are the addition of copy protection and whatnot. Which is why he's sending me an uncopy protected version to see if it works.
So are they going to send that to all the people who bought the game too?
So he's not trying to find like an excuse, I don't think. He's trying to... They really have every reason in the world to get to the bottom of it and fix it.
But seriously, why are they having to get to the bottom of this now?
Right. Seriously. Yeah, how does this happening after it came out?
How does it happen? It's not like these are isolated incidents.
Right.
This is a ton of people having problems fundamentally getting the game to run. Mm-hmm. I mean... How many machines did they test it on at Ubisoft and at Arkane? I mean,
What I'm wondering is, do they port in the copy protection or whatever at that last minute and then just say, okay, now it's going gold, we're off to the printers, done.
A game should not be going out in a box in this state.
Right.
If they add any code to it
as
at
much
all,
as we complain it's about that it's done when it's done MO, mm-hmm. It's times like these when you appreciate it, you know? I mean, when it comes time and you have to say, look, it's going to like... dig into our company's earnings and this and that, but in the end, it's going to like keep...
We're
going
to bite your ass.
How is it anything but a short-term win? It's a long-term disaster.
Right, because now people are going to come away with that bad taste in their mouth, and they're going to associate it both with the franchise, with the developer, with the publisher.
Right.
I mean, it's a very, very
bad one thing that scares me, they might associate that with Windows gaming.
This is exactly what Blizzard does not do.
Right.
You know, Blizzard is exactly... does the opposite. If they see things not working, they just say, screw it, we're not releasing it.
Right.
And we don't care if the fans in the short run are going to be mad and say they're going to boycott us or whatever, or we're even going to lose money in the short run, because we know in the long term, we're going to make people happy by making a good game.
Right.
And that's why they never released StarCraft Ghost.
It's worth looking into. Right. I wonder if, you know, I mean, I'll ask him next time I talk to him, if it was a case where, you know, Ubisoft said it has to be done at this time. And I know the relations differ because, like, say, for example, Gearbox, which is independent, but which Ubisoft publishes their games, the Brothers in Arms series, they're able to say it's done when it's done. They still have that freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Randy Pitchford, the CEO over there, is, like, over and over again, both in our magazine and in private to me, has said, you know, we have total control over these things. Yeah, so I'm just curious if it was Arkane that said, let's get this thing out now, or if it was Ubisoft or what, you know, I mean, what... Because it clearly wasn't ready to go out.
It's very frustrating. I mean, we put this game on our cover. We were obviously psyched about it, and I'd still like to play it. And, you know, clearly the developers are bummed, too. I mean, they must be. I'm sure after working for years on their game, they don't want to be reading forum posts. They don't want to hear podcast talks like this.
Yeah, us, it's like if we shipped our magazine, you know, and there were just big blank pages, printer errors,
copy edit mistakes, and
we you know, the art's in the wrong places and all the things that happened.
Wait, haven't we done all those things?
We have done all
that was our
well, not
issue,
the blank
right?
pages.
No, we haven't done that one.
But so it was loaded with that. We're not going to be though. You know, happy about it.
Yeah, no.
We're not gonna, you know.
Right. I mean, we can't sugarcoat it either, right?
Mm-hmm.
No. So
and so okay. I think 2142 is similar in that it definitely feels like it was put out before it was ready.
Yeah.
And I mean, actually, no, I'm just saying, well, it was put out before it was ready. Just period. That's all there is to it.
I mean, we had a game
that's based almost entirely on how addictive it is to rank up and acquire unlocks and whatnot. And yet they have issues with it, which they actually just said, I got to try it. As of last night, I think they issued one correction where they're trying to make it so that the servers actually do record your progress and whatnot, but that wasn't there.
That might be helpful.
The Titan mode, which is a big, you know, big, massive sort of bullet point for the game, is supposed to be, hey, here's, you know, one of the very, you know, foremost reasons you want to play this and why it's new is that we have this objective-based Titan mode. But then the Titans, when the commanders start moving the things, they lag the server so bad, and then especially inside the Titan, that it's just almost impossible.
People,
the deal with that mode is like you have to capture missile silos, right? Or
you capture points, which are called missile silos, and they're actual missile silos, and they fire missiles, ground to air, surface to air missiles at the Titan, which is this flying warship.
Okay,
think of the shield hover carrier, but even blockier and with a giant force field around
it. And when does the big lag kick in?
So, okay, so what happens then is that they can, they take out the shields, and then you start to board these things, or you, on your own, you defend it from people that are boarding it. And it's kind of like the swashbuckling, like you pull the ships up next to one another if you want. But basically,
in theory, it sounds great.
It sounds fantastic, and it can be really fun. But the commanders are able to move the Titans. They can move them around the maps. And when they do that, that creates problems already. It makes the whole game lag because, remember in Battlefield 1942 when you had aircraft carriers?
I was just going to say
that. Move them?
Yeah.
And it was very difficult for them to sync up this massive piece of geometry in transit with all the all the players and things happening on it. Mines, things that you drop kind of slide around or fall through floors and things like that. So you have that, but you have all these players in there, and then both of them get doing it at the same time, and then it just really goes haywire. I mean, it's like your ping is fine, but inside the thing, it's just people jerking around, rubber banding and all that. Yeah. But if you place a sentry gun down, it might be bouncing against the wall, or you can even nudge a wall, and it's somehow registering it as a moving object, so it hits you. It hurts you. It would be like if you were walking down a hall drunk and you stumbled on the side and it gave you like 80 damage.
I've had one of those nights recently. So
if someone dies, they just slide across the floor and then through the floor, through the wall, and out of the Titan. And you're trying to revive it. They're like, medic. You're trying to get them back in action to help you defend the thing or to assault the thing. And they're like, well, I guess you're on your way out of here.
Yeah. In the future, people go.
So that's another example. I mean, I could pick on other things because there are quite a few, AAA, showstopper bugs. But I mean, those are just examples of.
But those are just bugs. I mean, like,
anyone that was testing that had to have said, like, look, if you move these damn Titans, and again, you can't accuse this of being like too specific or too hardcore of a nitpick because every game you go on now. Every server, the rules will be move the Titan and get kicked or banned. And so it's gotten to the point where everyone has to enforce it on their own. It's like, if you come in there and you're going to do this, then we don't want you on our server. We're going to kick your ass out.
So the players have had to enforce this
on their own
artificial rule due to...
It's vigilante justice.
Right. Due to the...
So I did have someone try to tell me that was a reflection of my uber core perspective on Battlefield. And I said, well, I actually think it's a perspective of someone who's your main audience who plays
the
game
who are
is
buying
likely
the game.
To buy, all the sequels you make. And the fact everyone who likes the game enough to run and pay for a server of their own is enforcing this rule.
Yeah.
I think
you might be hardcore, but you are a fan of this series.
Right.
Your love of Battlefield.
And there's plenty of hard. I would say that of the, of the million people that bought Battlefield 2, whatever, I mean, the majority of them you would consider hardcore.
Well, right.
Because that's not a game where you play it once a month. It's not fun. I mean, if you play that game once a month, you can tell me about it. Yeah, watch Jeff. And the whole time I'm like, oh, boy.
Yeah, Sean was standing behind me going, ah, geez. just watching me play.
And then you tell me, you're like, look on this forum. They got hints on how to play. I look on there, I'm like, oh, man, that stuff. It was like the most rudimentary.
left button. Now,
and you know what? You know what's sad is I was a hardcore 42 player. Mm-hmm. So I'm not a complete rube at this kind of gameplay.
Right.
But, I mean, a lot has changed in this game.
Not to get obsessed over the scoring of this, but I just found myself wondering, what the hell is everyone else smoking? Why is the entire world on crack and they're giving the game, like, eights?
Okay, well, we know there's one review that was written before the game was even out, which is just completely ludicrous, right? I mean, if you're going to write about an online game and give it a score, you might want to wait until the game's actually online for people to play with.
Right.
But, okay.
So we're moving into this was next.
We'll move on from that.
That was my clever attempt at a segue, by the way.
We did want to talk, now that we're back to a scoring system and that our reviews are in some cases appearing prior to the issue.
Yeah, now we're remembering why we took scores away, aren't we?
Yeah.
Now that we have scores again, we're getting nothing but shit for
it. Both of these games got scores. Battlefield got 2042 got a 6 out
of 10. Totally fair score.
And Dark Messiah got a 4 out of 10. And so immediately, these are striking people as just like preposterously low or harsh scores.
Right.
And so, Ryan, you want to take it away with the whole...
Yeah, let's have this review score discussion.
Let's do it.
Review King, Ryan, go.
Oh, boy.
Go.
Okay, so we like many other publications in the industry, we're using a 1 to 10 system now. And a lot of people have a problem interpreting the 1 to 10 system. the way it breaks down, according to how most publications tend to score their games, you see a game with an 8 or higher, and that's basically that score is telling you, go out and buy this game because it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And 7 usually winds up appearing to be about average, much like a 70% is a C. And,
right.
You know, I mean, like, we're kind of all spoiled by the educational system.
American education system.
Which, ironically, does not know how to compute averages.
I'm not going to blame people on this, like the readers and stuff. When you say they have a hard time understanding, I think that people have a difficult time understanding how to understand these scales is because there's so many varieties of interpretation that the people that employ them use. You know,
well, it's also the legacy
of the 7 is so many
gaming
different
press. I think it's a lot of the fault is of us, the media, who
years
has
and years.
Years and years of softball reviews. I mean, they're not softball reviews, but of scoring in this way that does not take into account the full scale.
In that
range, it's known within our own industry as the 7-9 scale. We all know that. We all know this term, and what that means, if you don't know and you're listening, is that it's sort of a default, sort of de facto way of thinking. Both, I think, for the press and the readers now at this point, that you know, the entire range of what a game could be is either is 7-9, and that 1-6 don't exist. Anything from 6.5 down is essentially an F.
And they do exist, but they're there when someone, you know, categorically despises a game. But then it doesn't matter if it's a five or a two or a four or a three.
Right, and it's hard to know what they actually mean. Why are they giving this a 20%
further evidence
40%?
For that de facto scoring system is that if you have what is ostensibly, you know, a 1-10 scale, and then you have all these finer shades in between the numbers, some of them use a 0.5, some of it's like you can have like an 8.1, 8.2, 8.3, and that's to give when the scale range is basically in between 7 and 9, it's to give you a 30-point scale instead of a 3-point scale.
Right. Now, what was that review that we were talking about before the podcast that gave, it was a Battlefield?
Well, there's an 8.4.
8.4.
But what does that even mean?
Right, so we were joking.
8.5
would have been good, but the 0.4 signaled that.
The context of the review was saying how, like, it had all these inherent problems and talk and breaks it down, like, all these things that are wrong with it, and then it says, 8.4.
This is a classic 7-9 scale problem. they found all problems with the game, and to signal that it was a disappointing game, they gave it an 8.4.
Right.
Which, if you're trying to use the full scale like we are, completely screws up the perception of what we're trying to do.
And so in my case, it's like I gave it a 6, which from our conditions is above average. And that was because despite all these problems, and then besides, in addition to the bugs and whatnot, there are a number of other things about the game itself. It's just, it's, you know, too soon, too quickly. It definitely seems like a mod in this and that. It's nowhere near as entertaining to me, even, you know, bugs and flaps aside, as BF2 was and all these other reasons. But the unlock system and the ranking system is actually more engaging than the game is fun to play, but that still counts for something. That still makes you want to play it, you know.
Read your review and you look at our scoring scale, it completely makes sense. You know, the 6 that you gave it applies,
right?
You
know? And the text, of course, which always gets swept under the rug in discussions of scores.
Oh, text
makes it clear that
actual opinion.
Despite these things that I'm talking about, I'm also underscoring that these are the enjoyable and rewarding aspects of the game, and you can weight those accordingly to how they sound to you, how significant you hold those.
Okay, so why are we right and everybody else is wrong in terms of scale? Well, I mean, like, we're fighting a massive perception battle with trying to use a 10-point scale and using the whole thing. So why do we even bother, and what do we do about it?
Well, I guess one thing is just to have everyone listening just repeat the mantra, 5 is average, but we are fighting an uphill battle right now.
In the print, in the beginning of the review section, we can also spell this out.
Which Ryan is doing.
Yeah. I think we need to do that on 1UP as well.
That, I think, is where it's complicated, you know, like you're saying, on 1UP. Because, for one, the environment's different. It's a hyperlink environment where you could be on Game Rankings 1 minute looking at an IGN review and then a GameSpot review, and then you end up at the 1UP review. And you're like, hey, these are all 10-point scales.
Mm-hmm.
and then you see the difference, and you're just basically looking at them as, you know, all things equal. These are all 10-point scales. How can they be any different?
Yeah.
10 is 10.
And then you go to
one
a place like Game Rankings, which converts everyone's scale to, like, a 5-point scale.
Right.
And suddenly, and everyone's that supposed to be part of this same collective thought
crazy
pattern.
And what's screwed up is our review might actually be, you know, in terms of what we're saying about the game, exactly the same as what GameSpot and IGN said. But because of the difference in the scoring, it looks like we gave it a way worse review.
Uh-huh. And I can say, really it's like, if maybe if you worked or you're freelancing for one of these outlets, you would score it higher because you'd be like, I don't want this game, as flawed as I think it is, I still think it's more entertaining than, like, whatever, you know, Pac-Man World Rally.
Uh-huh.
But that game's on here with the score of, like, 8.9. And that's going to force me to do this or that. So it's a real big complicated mess. And I think, I mean, 1UP, it should be very clear in about, you know, in the way that we're aiming to do in the beginning of our review section that, okay, you're now entering this territory and this is how, you know, we understand this scale. But then the other thing is that you have so many different writers and it's just a matter of keeping us all in touch, keeping us all on the same page. You know, where Ryan, you can send out, you know, emails and have phone conversations or just directly speak to all the people that are writing for your review section. But that needs to happen everywhere so that, because all it takes is just, you know, one that's really out of touch or a few people that are consistently really out of touch. And they're at least in terms of writing for a 7 to 9 scale. And it's going to make the stuff look really bad because then it's going to make that 6 that I gave it really look like a 4 or something, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
And also,
it has to be consistent.
And this is kind of and it's also like it's a really minor point, but one thing I started noticing actually just this morning. So with the Dark Messiah review, which got a 4, if you take a look, if you go to the review on 1UP right now, you take a look and it says underneath the 4, broken. 5 is average, 4 is broken.
Yeah.
So it seems like there's very little middle ground.
Wording stuff we need to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there needs to be a consistency thing across the board. And I'm not saying that it's totally busted, but I think it's just some legacy stuff. So,
but that's almost in line with the 7 to 9, where the difference between a 7 and a 6 is like satisfactory to unplayable.
Right.
You know,
that's a wording issue. But, you know, like I was saying before the podcast, one of my worries is, no matter how we describe, no matter what the legend says, what these numbers mean, the American school system of 70% is a C and 60% is a D, you know, how do we ever get past that perception?
So we change to letter grades? Is that easier?
That would be really nice.
It would be nice.
Give out
Entertainment
cupcakes.
Weekly does it.
That's true.
It's very understandable what a C is.
Well, it requires no explanation.
It's funny, like our old CGW, the star system, the 1 through 5 stars, if you break it down, it's like fundamentally the same as the 1 to 10 scale.
Yes, it is.
But it's just like the perception is just...
The perception is
with
we're
numbers,
fighting a big battle here.
You know?
Let's take away the damn scores again.
See how much headache.
You know what?
Let's explain ourselves for 2 hours.
God damn, we put him back. Everybody yells at us for taking him away. We put him back.
The Dark Messiah review. I just had a conversation with the person at Ubisoft who's doing the PR management on that game.
Oh, shit.
And
she probably wasn't happy.
Of course. You know, of course, they're all unhappy with the fact that we gave it 4 out of 10. Yeah.
Right.
And she was saying that she felt that it read more like an 8.
More like an 8. Yeah,
right?
See, there you go.
Are you kidding me? You're kidding me, dude.
Which, like...
preposterous.
What?
No, on the 7 to 9 scale, right?
Yeah.
We actually got into kind of a debate about our score versus another semi-low score that another place gave it. And I actually went as far as to go to, like, the site in question's scoring... Mm-hmm. description,
right,
and where they actually state that 7 is our average.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like we could give a game the exact same negative review as another website, but because of the scoring, it's going to look like we didn't like it nearly as much, when in fact we might have said the exact same thing, but their scoring.
And that's all we get, too. You know,
bogus.
We shouldn't even be talking to PR people about reviews after the reviews go up.
Eh.
But after that, well, though, it's like
But they always call.
2142, and again, the concern was this score is harsh. It wasn't that the criticisms that you have about the game are harsh.
It's just
it wasn't
the
that, yeah, your understanding of the game is misinformed or is harsh. It's the score is harsh.
Yeah.
Yeah. The scores will make a lot more sense to people, I think, when the first issue gets in people's hands, because it's kind of a closed box system there where you do see the full scale in effect.
You do, yeah.
And these are like the first two like random shotgun blasts that happened to appear online.
So and they were both really high-profile games that got fairly low scores.
And,
so,
in all fairness, I think Tom Chick was a little too harsh, but pretty much on the money. I would have given the game maybe a 5.
Well, that's, Jeff and I are hoping to be able to play the game.
Yeah, I can't rate it much above like a 1 at this point. I can't even fucking play it.
Given our experience with it, it's pretty much a 0.
Right.
No, but we don't know.
Just
on technical. The funny thing is,
it's a 0 now, but it could be an 8 or a 9.
You know, the funny thing is, Tom Schick didn't run into any of the technical problems.
Gave
it a 4.
That's very interesting, and that's a really good point. Here's a guy who had none of these issues, and you know, I edited his piece, and I spent some time on email with him, like, hey, you know, I can't play the game, and there's a whole bunch of people saying they can't play the game. How come you didn't talk about this in your review? Well, he's one of the lucky people who didn't have any technical problems at all, except for the sound stuttering, but which he did mention in the review. But, yeah, ironically, he just didn't like the game.
What?
So they kind of got off easy.
Yeah, right. If he had had technical problems like we had. Boy, that 4 would have been,
even rougher.
And the other thing, the 7-9 system, like when you get down to it, it the only reason it exists is to feed like the marketing.
Oh people, yeah, absolutely.
Which is just like a weird, you know.
Right.
It's
when we get these calls after a bad review, you know, it's always, you know, you get this kind of sense of betrayal in a way, like, you screwed up our marketing plan.
Yeah.
We can't put this on.
Which is why I said we shouldn't be talking
to them. Can't put this on the box. Like, yeah. Hi, guess what? We are writing them for the consumers. For you.
I got a quote for your box right here.
I have a couple of PR contacts who, like clockwork, whenever we give one of this company's games a low score, he'll always call me and just be like, anything below 70% on game rankings is marketplace failure.
As we know, some of us in the industry, that these PR people, sadly, very sadly and very unfairly, I think, often live and die by the scores that these games get.
Right.
So, you know, if I don't know if this is true with this game, so let's just use it as an example. And if this isn't the case, please don't misinterpret me, and I apologize. But let's say with Dark Messiah, you know, that it's entirely possible that the company is saying, hey, you know, that they're calling the PR person in and saying, why did this game get a 4? What did you do wrong?
Right.
Did you not give GFW the right message?
Yeah, the assumption
did they not get enough screens? You know, they blame the PR people for their bad game.
Right, exactly. You know? The assumption is that basically a PR person ends up determining the review scores.
Right, and sometimes they'll get a bonus or not get a bonus, depending on the kind of score that their game ultimately gets.
That is so broken.
It's not even broken, it's retarded.
But it's broken thinking, and like
broken thinking.
It's despicable.
If they want to reward a PR person for doing their job well, it's, you know, for securing preview coverage or something, because really that's what their job
for
is.
Exposure.
Getting
exposure.
It is not the PR person's fault if the game is bad.
No. Sure.
Okay? They could be the best PR person in the world. They could have scored a cover for this game. We could be their best buds. We could be writing about this game every month. But when the game comes out and it sucks,
we're going to say
it sucks, no matter how great the PR person was.
And I think a lot of people just, like, inside the industry, they just don't get that.
Yeah, they don't.
And then you have cases where they actually try to tell you, they're really concerned about who's reviewing which game in advance.
Oh, jeez, that's another one.
Yeah. And I don't know. It's like I say that, and I almost expected, like, because I know, like, if I was in a certain company, people would get really nervous, like, hey, quiet down. We don't talk about that stuff. But screw it. You know, I mean, that stuff has got to change.
It has got to change. And it's such a headache for us.
Again, nothing to lose by calling it out. But, yeah, so they'll want to know who's reviewing it. They almost want to make recommendations. They keep a history of how we respond and how each reviewer reviews various games.
We think Tom Chick ought to review our game because he's a big fan of the franchise. Yeah. Oh, you think that, do
you? And they rate us according to
how nice for you.
How favorable they assume the review we're going to produce is. You know?
And why don't you write the review for us and just submit it?
Here.
Since you're so concerned about it. We think Bruce Shelley would be great for reviewing Age of Empires 3.
So bad.
And I say this as a friend of Bruce, so I'm just using his example.
Or like in the converse, like we really don't want this person on this review.
Right.
You know? That just makes me want to give that game.
I know, me too.
Never tell me what you don't want to see because then I'm going to do exactly that. But they'll never know the secret. They'll totally do like reverse
It really
psychology.
Makes you wonder if this kind of crap exists in other... You know, entertainment media.
Sure, it does.
The whole world is run that way. Yeah. I mean, like from politics on down, it's just a big matter of like. Yeah,
but damn it, we're holding true.
Well, it's like like we were talking about the other day. Game quote unquote critics getting paid to do these satellite media tours where they're, there's examples of a freelance journalist who will show up on these like morning shows or whatever today or. Around the time of E3, so tell us what's hot at E3 this year. Mm-hmm. And they'll mention a few games, and it turns out that actually they've been paid by the company to say those things.
Yeah. I've heard about, the movie industry, you got, these junket things going on where they show a movie, and then, the critics, maybe halfway through, some of them will just go and, sign up for a quote. It's like, I'll pick that one.
You mean Wireless Mag has like the...
Wireless, the Urban Radio Network. It's all those ones that you see on the bad movies that are saying, wow!
Holy cow, it's like crap on a movie screen.
And this is something like Roger Ebert.
Eight thumbs up.
So it's just a matter of knowing who the respectable critics are versus the Wireless Radio Network.
Right.
It's not just the game industry.
No.
In our industry though, it's far more than just the reviews. It's everything. Right. Like you were saying, E3 was just the biggest in my mind, one of the most despicable and completely absurd offenders. In that, it'll be interesting to see what happens this year going forward as the convention changes. But the whole you fought against it forever about the notion of the E3 judges and things. Being
I am
winners.
So glad I never have to be on that.
You get a box
E3
that says
again.
Winner, and that's then you're like, grief. Okay, well, cool. What did it win? And you look, and it's like. It's like E3, and it's not even part of the... The E3 Judges Award is bad enough, preposterous enough, but then you see, winner, but it's like some random website. Shecky's Game Shack says it was one of the notable, Game Boy Advance games.
Yeah.
But you're like, so it was a winner based on... What the hell does this even mean?
Oh, I know. The beginning of the E3 Game Critics... committee, whatever, I boycotted it at first because I just totally didn't believe in it. But the sad fact was that it granted you access to stuff at E3 that they wouldn't show anybody else.
That was the only reason
we're only going to let you see it if you're an E3 game critic. So I finally, they wore me down and I joined it, but I was so against it because it was like, what am I voting on here? These are betas. These are pre-beta. These are alphas of games.
Not only that, they're vertical slices. Often that do not reflect any levels that will exist in the final product.
Right. It was absolutely
created,
bogus. It was a complete marketing scheme.
Yeah, it was a waste
was
of developers' time
freaking box
to sit there and say, let's make some shit that's not even going to be part of the game. That's just going to wow people in this wildly artificial environment.
Making a commercial.
And then for the press, when you hey, this is a chance for us too. We'll make a special pretty logo on it and we'll get it on every other box out there and it's got our website URL on it.
Right.
And we'll expose ourselves too. Let's make some winners.
And
let's
what are you giving awards
winners
to? You're giving awards to nothing. You're right. And I think what you said before was really the saddest part was that game developers and publishers were now starting to waste time throughout the year just getting ready for E3 instead of working on the actual game
to win this
stupid award, you know?
When you did vote, didn't you vote for games like Bratz Dolls and stuff?
I did. I messed up the balloting every time. If they go through every year, there's going to be who the hell voted for? Yeah.
Are you like a dangling Chad of the game?
Pretty much. I was because I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do this.
And then the judges, let's keep exposing. Not only that, the judges, you would get special things from the PR.
Oh yeah,
there was, prior to the show.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there was one year when I was a judge, I would get like such amazing tchotchkes. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, there was swag.
Oh, the only one I really appreciated was a bottle of whiskey. They knew me,
but it came in a casket.
It came in a casket.
It came in a giant it was 2.5 feet, but giant for a tchotchke. In a casket and this and that.
And the thing is, I drank the bottle. Still didn't vote for him, but thank you for the whiskey.
The whole thing was despicable.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
There's a lot of things I'm actually going to miss about E3, but thank God that those bogus.
The only thing
are
I'm going to miss is Kensha Hall. That's the only thing I'm going to miss about E3.
Yeah, okay. So we need to take a break here. When we come back, Let's see if we can say anything positive.
No.
We've been freaking harsh this morning.
We're on fire.
Is it because we're podcasting? Is it because we're podcasting in the morning?
Cranky in the morning.
We're like all bitter about
everything. No, we just brought up reviews and, and this like some of the related politics from there. And
okay, when we come up, I promise the first thing, we're going to all search our notes here. We're going to come up back with something happy.
So, yeah. Well, so funny at least.
So we'll be right back with happy PC gaming news.
Yay!
Want to know what's new now? Then join Jim Lauterbach and Patrick Norton as they tackle the latest technology news. They'll keep you informed with their weekly What's New Now podcast. Just go to whatsnewnow.com and subscribe, or subscribe through iTunes.
Listen to EGM Live to hear Electronic Gaming Monthly editors take you beyond the pages of the magazine.
Extended impressions of the hottest games.
Shocking celebrity guest stars.
Exterminate all man animals at will!
And the newest video game soundtracks.
That's EGM Live, available at egmlive.oneup.com or the iTunes Music Store.
And we are back, and we have a very, very special segment of GFW Radio coming up. It's actually a radio play. Okay. So, Darren, do you want to set up the play?
Okay, so our scene cast, on the Future Mark forums, there was basically an identity scammer got busted on MSN. Now, what happened was this one guy identifying himself as, well, you know what, I'll just let the radio play speak for itself, but this all happened over MSN Messenger, so.
Okay, and what was this website, just to give them the props?
Futuremark.com. It's, okay. Yeah, so take it away, fellas.
Okay, so we start off with the user known as Greg_Valve_OLS.
And this really happened.
This conversation actually happened.
This is basically
a cut and paste message in a chat.
Okay.
So now sit yourself at your computer and imagine the very first message coming through to you. Clack, clack, clack.
We logged multiple IPs from your account. Need to verify your information.
My information?
Yeah, we believe someone may have stolen your account. You haven't shared your account information with anyone, have you?
No, I don't even have it written down.
Maybe a keylogger on your PC. Maybe you need a format.
Well,
if you can verify your account information to me, I can ensure that only your IP can have access to it. It's a new security feature we're trying because this happens so much. Login names and passwords ain't safe anymore, you know.
Can I be honest with you, Greg?
Okay.
Look, I don't know how you got this MSN account name. Don't really care either. Unlike you, I do work for Valve. Trace my IP and you'll see. Greg, this is a serious infraction against the TOS. You're at risk of losing your account. I need some information from you if you want me to unlock your account. I'm going to write you up, but I'll only suspend your account for 3 days since this is your first infraction, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, now this is a part where he actually goes to at great lengths, Ryan. he actually gets all this guy's personal information. And scene.
Okay. Don't try to log into Steam. If you're connected now, you need to log off.
Right.
So I can update your account. Okay, try to log in now.
Okay. It says login failed. WTF. WTF.
Greg?
Did you ban me? Did you ban me? Why?
Greg?
What?
Valve will never ask.
Why?
Valve will never ask you for your username and password, Greg.
Oh my god, dude, what the frack? Why?
I don't work for Valve, dude, but you just got pwned.
I once.
We'll take a quick aside here and break the third wall and say that is WANST. I wanst.
Okay, back to you, Greg.
Oh, you're supposed to ask me why I'm asking for your information.
You skipped the line.
All right.
This is all ruined.
Man, way to break the fourth wall. Take two.
Okay, hang on.
Take it from I don't work for Valve, dude.
I don't work for Valve, dude, but you just got pwned.
That's why. Oh my god, dude. What the frack? Why?
Why are you trying to steal my account?
I want.
Then why were you asking for my information?
I was just making a joke. We're not serious, honest, dude. Just give my account back, please. I'm only 13 and I saved up for like a year to buy it.
Go mow some yards, bitch.
Yeah. Excellent work. Excellent work, fellas.
The DFW players.
The DFW players.
The dramatis personae.
So, that was better than the high school drama department.
It was. So let it be known. What can happen to you?
Charlie Brown. That's actually a great pump.
That's a great.
That's a great story.
So it's on the. If you want to read the whole transcript, which is funnier.
So the lesson is: don't try to steal people's Steam accounts. You may get pwned.
It would be even better if Broken Rabbit wasn't an actual Valve employee. This is just that guy was that easy to punk.
Well, he wasn't.
Well, he wasn't. That was the joke.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
he wants an employee.
Yeah, he wants. I don't understand the nature of this narrative.
Okay, Grandpa Elliot, let's...
Okay, thank you. Thank you, GFW radio players. Hopefully we'll have another performance.
If you enjoyed that, please sponsor us.
Yeah, let's look at Nerd Factor and talk about some World of Warcraft trading card.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Next wait, hold on. Before we talk about...
Guild Wars!
Before we talk about this MMO that sucks, let's talk about a good MMO.
Okay. It's Ryan's Guild Wars hours.
Just ringing his ass the whole time. 2142, shut up. Dark Messiah, shut up. It's not even a real RPG.
So are you done preparing for Nightfall?
Okay. All right, let's let him talk.
I'm done preparing, yeah.
How many hours you log, by the way, this time?
I don't know. I checked yesterday, and it was up to a total of 556.
Dude.
Whoa. Dude.
Wow.
You realize you could have written War and Peace.
Wow, just wow.
But Nightfall's out, and it's good.
Is it very good?
It's according to our scoring system, it would probably
be... don't use that.
It would probably be excellent.
Okay.
So you're
so a six?
Yeah. But for anybody who hasn't gotten into Guild Wars, it's a pretty good starting point. They've done a lot of things with the NPCs to make them
to be more pee.
Sorry. Yeah, actually, yeah. Yeah. The NPCs before, who you could use in lieu of real players and who were oftentimes better than real players.
There's a big surprise.
Yeah.
For an online game.
They were kind of like these generic characters that you couldn't really control. You couldn't.
What were their rad names? Like Tom? Like T-H-O-M-E?
Something like that.
That was one of them.
Meanwhile, Ryan, tell me about one of the missions, your favorite missions from the game.
Oh, hang on, I'll get to that.
Okay.
But the NPCs, the new guys, you can they level up with you, and you can equip them with whatever equipment that you want.
Do they persist then?
They do, and they're actually part of the story. It's like a single-player RPG almost. Like these dudes join you and...
So when you log off and log back in, the same dude will be there with the... stuff you gave him, and
in this living, breathing world, would you say you begin to care for these figures?
Just a little bit, Sean.
Ryan, can a video game make
they're
you
like
cry?
Cylons.
That was King's Quest IV. That was a long time ago.
Yeah,
we're past that.
What?
So back on track.
Okay.
Did I miss a sentence?
Yeah, so did I.
I think you did.
That was like a break.
I asked Ryan if a video game can make him cry.
Okay.
I did miss a sentence.
Me too.
I cried when Tom went and stood in the fire pit and let himself die when he was like my only monk. Actually, Tom was a fighter. Tom was a fighter, so never mind.
So the NPCs in this game don't do things like that because you can tell them not to.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And you can set up their skills however you want. So, you know, your necromancer doesn't just use a bunch of life draining spells and kill himself. Mm-hmm. It's good.
So how would you compare it, say, to Factions, the last one?
Faction. Well, I like the setting in Factions better, like the whole like Asia land sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're all about
Asia
Ninja.
Land.
Asia land. Asia
yeah.
Land.
Yeah.
It's like a theme park.
Time to buy Ryan a globe. Asia land.
But
the new classes in Nightfall are a lot better, I think, than the ones in Factions. The ones in Factions, the Ritualist and the Assassin. Are both kind of, they both kind of suck.
The Ritualist. Like the when are they adding the fetishist?
The Ritualist.
Actually, I want them to add like one. I want them to add like the OCD character.
The fetishist. That's the Robert Coffey class.
But
thanks.
The new classes in this game kind of have like a more a clearer place in things. There's the dervish who's like a melee fighter. They use like scythes, and they have all these enchantment spells that mm-hmm. kind of buff them, and when they're in melee. Which is
that just sounded like every
yeah.
game.
Yeah. Well, no. Well, you look at
and some sort of weapon.
You compare him to the assassin in Factions, who was also a melee class.
Yeah.
But assassins had no way of really making themselves stay alive.
Okay.
When they're like in melee, so mm-hmm. they just run up and die.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why nobody really takes assassins into groups. And the other new class is the Paragon. Who's sort of like the Paladin in WoW. Mm-hmm. Just like lots of group buffs. And mm-hmm.
So he's like a healer.
He's really boring.
Support class
yeah.
fellow.
Yeah.
The dude that gets ordered around all the time.
Hey, Hail me.
Paragon, give me a +5 stat buff as I continue to tank.
There you go.
Hail me, Rez.
And then and the other thing I've been noticing in Nightfall is like just like weird amounts of geek humor.
Hmm. There's such as in the game itself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like genuinely laugh out loud.
Is it well, there, is it LOL worthy?
Well, there's like this whole quest that's a spoof of Snakes on a Plane.
Huh.
What's it called?
It's actually called Drakes on the Plane.
Okay. Like that's
PLAIN.
Oh, clever.
That is totally immersion breaking.
You're walking across this plane because you're delivering this scythe to this dude who's gonna buy it.
I thought it was scythe.
I thought it was scythe.
Is it? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Never mind. Go on.
And the scythe it's a banana scythe. It's like a banana.
An actual banana.
I don't know why it's a banana, but
what?
It's a banana scythe.
Okay.
What were they smoking?
Right? It's got to be a reference to something, but I don't know okay. what it is. But and you're walking across this plane to meet this guy, and there's all these drakes, like these dragon sort of things. Running around that you're fighting.
I've had it with these motherfucking drinks.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, now.
And like, and he,
Hey, we are, I did, quick aside, we are able to swear as much as we want, at least according to, I just did the EGM podcast last week.
Wait, are you fucking kidding me?
I'm serious.
Sorry.
Can we use Battlestar Galactica language?
Yeah.
Frack.
That's what I did.
Frack.
Okay.
I brought
okay.
that in a radio play. Although that's as bad as Snakes on a Plane now, so.
Drake's on a plane. Please.
So, You're fighting all these drakes, mm-hmm. and your warrior NPC eventually is just like, you know, I've had it with these god-blasted drakes on this god-blasted plane.
Uh-huh.
So,
it's,
all right. Maybe you had to be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a character in the WoW expansion now, in Burning Crusade, there's one of the cooking trainers, like somebody McWeak Sauce is his name. That's kind of funny. But see, you want to do that again?
Wow. Okay, hey, Michael like Winslow Captain's here. We need some like cricket sound effects for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, did you get it?
Are you playing?
Because he's sauce. Because he's
it's like
a cook.
He's a cook.
I'm gonna. It's, like the punchline, you tell some long-winded joke, and the punchline is, and he said, I'm going to pwn some noobs. Like, you get it? He changed the O for a P and called the play inexperienced players noobs.
Did the bunny.
Maybe we should go back to being bitter.
Yeah.
Since comedy is our thing.
I'm in spastic mode. The morning's good. I'm a morning person.
Woo. Really?
I'm a spaz in the morning.
All right.
Let's talk about the WoW card
spaz
game.
Spaz in the morning.
Well, I was going to ask before we do that.
Okay.
Do you play Nightfall as like a single player game? Like when you're playing through the
I generally
campaign?
Try to rely on other players as little as possible.
Well, I was going to say like you're an NPC kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
When other players
it's great
do
for
suck.
You now. Huh? Did you in the course of that? I mean, when I was watching you play, you were commanding, you know, your NPCs to do all these various things, but you weren't even with them. You were up on a hill, like overseeing them. I mean, is that just like how specific your the commands you can give them?
Well, that what you were seeing that day was kind of like a tutorial mode that showed me how to command them around.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sort of like, I mean, you can command them to specific spots. You can tell them to target specific enemies, and it almost. I guess if you want to play it that way, it works almost like a pseudo RTS.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that seemed pretty cool.
So, mm-hmm. and there's like a whole PvP mode with these hero NPCs that I haven't tried yet.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, it's kind of interesting. It's actually what's it? Gods and Heroes is trying to do something similar to that. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's kind of the basis for that whole.
It's weird to me to play like an online RPG single player like that, but that is actually something that might bring me back to Guild Wars.
Because that sounds
very
appealing.
My problem with Guild Wars is I couldn't find anyone that I normally play with who wanted to play with me.
You could play with Ryan.
Well, yeah. That's,
like, that was
right by you.
You can frolic in the plains and avoid the drakes.
I played the original prior to the expansions a whole lot.
Yeah.
Like, by yourself? And then after I ascended and did all that, like, then it's kind of like I probably got into some other game and that's why I quit.
I have a lot of respect for that game. It's like a time thing.
It was awesome. It was a great, it was like definitely one of the best games that year.
And yet you have time for WoW.
Yeah.
Okay. WoW is work.
There's only room for one giant time sink.
Right. And which actually is a big part of the discussion we had with Jeff Butler yesterday. So if I may make a quick aside.
Oh, please do.
Jeff Butler being the CEO of Sigil Games, who's making Vanguard. And last week we had talked about how we wanted to talk to them about Vanguard. And so we did. We had a very special podcast with Mr. Butler yesterday. And we talked about all sorts of great things. And he was very candid about the, you know, this whole issue of how are you going to get people to quit WoW to play your game? So we're going to post that at some point this week. So look for it online. Special bonus GFW podcast.
It's because we love you.
Because we love you.
That's that way.
In that way.
With much love.
We just want to be friends.
Maybe you do. I'm in it.
Special fire.
I'm all in.
You're in it FTW.
Okay. So anyway. The WoW trading card game.
Yes.
We saw this game in action. Upper Deck came by to show this game to us a few weeks ago.
I actually got my cards in the mail the other day.
You did?
You went out and bought them?
Well, I had pre-ordered them like 2 months ago.
Oh, that's right.
Okay.
That's right.
But since the happy fun time when we saw the game and it looked kind of neat and it looked like it was just going to be some, you know, another trading card game that was going to interest some 0.001 subset of all dorks on Earth.
Me.
As usual with WoW has turned out to be an underestimate of the truth. And so now there's there's sort of a big controversy about it, and who wants to field the WoW training card game controversy? Ryan?
People are pissed because they have to buy cards to get special things like Turtle Mount in the game.
Yeah. There's these... I don't know if anyone who's like been following the WoW card game knows that there were these loot cards that are essentially, they kind of pitched them as like Willy Wonka golden tickets.
There's like three of them, right?
Yeah, there's three different kinds. There's like a turtle mount, which is like something a level one player can use, which is unusual for mounts because only level 40s can use mounts normally. Mm-hmm. And there's like a tabard, which is just like a shirt, basically. Mm-hmm. And what was the other one? The baby hippogriff?
That's right.
So it's all strictly cosmetic.
It's all cosmetic.
All
stuff.
Cosmetic.
Right.
The mount doesn't even
have a speed boost. It's a turtle. Yeah.
No speed boost.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's another set of loot you can get that isn't from the special like random cards that are packed in these booster packs.
Right.
It's from collecting these points. So every booster pack you get 100 points that you redeem on the Upper Deck website.
Right.
And then, it's essentially like grinding faction for Upper Deck entertainment instead of, you know, for like, you know, the Bloodtail Buccaneers. And
so people figured out points, that. Right, go ahead.
There's three things you unlock there. There's another tabard, and then there's like a fireworks display trinket, which is essentially, you know, some particle effects to appear above your head. Mm-hmm. Like, and then
so basically, it's total.
All cosmetic.
It's all crap. I mean, it's.
But I guess some people figured out that to like earn enough points to get the fireworks or whatever meant they were going to have to buy this many booster packs or whatever, which meant this amount of real world money.
But if you spend that amount of real world money to get to ride around on a turtle, you don't need to complain to the card makers or the Blizzard. You need to complain to your mom for dropping you on your head.
Yeah, there's a ton. There's a ton of people.
I think that's the root of the issue. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
And it really is. Yeah.
Complaining that like it's just so expensive to get these stupid little cosmetic trinkets.
Yeah, some of the forum posts are outrageous. They're unreal. Like, they're making me buy $2,000 worth of cards just to get this tabard. Like,
so then
actually, no one's making you spend
$2. It should be incriminating. It's like the Chode Index. If you see someone riding that turtle, it's like the red badge of like disgrace. You know, look at that dude bought a bunch of card stock for like $80 so he can ride around on that shitty little turtle.
And it's
like, that's what you should do in game, and that's the end of the fucking problem.
And they're up on eBay.
And they're up on eBay already.
for like it's hundreds like of like, dollars.
How much
like,
is the Turtle Mount going for on eBay right,
right.
now?
So basically, Upper Deck 200? Is getting all this grief online for basically running their business as they've always run it.
Yeah, this is nothing
right?
unusual.
I mean, that's what trading
that's
card
the
games
nature
are.
Of the trading card.
Right.
It's like buying like 100 Baseball boxes of Honey Nut Cheerios to get a plush honeybee. And then like complaining that you had to buy, you know,
right. No one put the gun to your head to buy all the Honey Nut.
I think what would be kind of funny is if they actually, I would be curious to see what the opinions are of people who actually play the Magic the Gathering card games. I mean,
it's
is
a
this,
good game.
Is it, but I mean, is it out of line? I mean, is it so out of whack from what everyone else does?
No, listen, the card game itself is a game,
right. That's
and
exactly
it's a good game. This loot card thing, that was just like bonus extra
bonus.
Crap for WoW players.
I mean,
this
it
game
is, they
completely
did put
holds
it in
up
there
on its own.
To take well, advantage yes. of yes. the tendencies of those
course.
People, but
you're
they're
right.
only taking advantage of tendencies of people that already have those tendencies. You know,
right. Right. They're not going to create new. They're not going to create new crack addicts here. This
right.
is like people who are already
it's a certain personality type who just has to have. That
don't
stuff.
Don't blame people for it's like you know for catering to that like perverse. Whatever,
well, right. Then
you know.
We can go after the tobacco companies for providing tobacco. And
right.
Liquor companies for providing liquor. Mm-hmm. You know, people are going to have their addictions.
There's nothing wrong with liquor companies.
Right. Or comic books. You know, I mean, I used to listen. I'm just like 2 years away from bitching about spending $20 or $30 a week on comic books. And then I'm like mad because I'm like, I don't have time to read Shadow of the Bat. I can't believe there's another tie in the Shadow of the Bat. I haven't even read the last eight issues.
And
it's
you
like,
realize you didn't,
hi,
you
yeah, didn't. Duh. I don't. I'm over 40. I don't actually need to read them. And so I just stopped buying comic books and I'm done now. And, you know.
You don't miss them at all?
I don't. Well, I do miss them a little bit. But you know what? I just chose to not spend my money that way anymore.
Right. You wait for me to spend mine so I can hand you off my other comic book.
Exactly.
Smart man.
Yeah, so.
The controversy here is that people are crazy.
Yeah.
I wanted a real controversy. I thought there was like, I want some real genuine scandal.
Nah.
There's no genuine scandal.
You want scandal? I got scandal.
You do?
There's people complaining.
Drop it on Hex
Scandal. Oh, that scandal. That's a pretty good scandal. Do you want to talk about that, or do you want to wait till?
Well, you know what? I'm gonna hold off on the full thing for now. But I do want to give props to Hexus.net. It's a British hardware review site.
How do you spell that?
Hexus.net. Okay. So they posted up this news the other day. Now I still have to confirm with sources, but I'm going to give them full props. Read the story. It's about their dealings with Alienware. I'm going to come back next week with a full report. But I'm going to say one thing right now. If anybody ever on the hardware side dictated to me terms that I'm not going to review their products anymore if it's a good review, unless it's a good review, I would blackball them from this magazine. They would never see their hardware reviewed in my magazine.
Damn.
Or you
well,
just have
you
to
know,
do it
I'm
on
just
your
hey,
own.
You know, that
out
goes
there.
For the game reviews too.
Well, you don't hear about that going on with game reviews.
No, you really don't.
But with hardware, some companies. Now, I don't know if this is totally true, and I'm just saying in general. If anybody were to ever dictate terms to me, I don't want their stuff in my magazine. So that's a shout out right now.
Then you can't review my PC, Darren.
Yeah.
Well, your PC sucks anyhow.
Hey, you can't review it.
Let's see, a couple other random things before we sign off. We got word about the New Yorker thing. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Nice little bit of mainstream press for the game industry. What was that about, Darren?
Well, it's a story looking at the kind of like this, a quick look at the evolution of the game industry, but it's a main focus on Will Wright and his, you know, basically looking at his life and his design process and stuff like that. And here's a really cool quote that I found from the story that I'll just read really
quick. Did we mention it was the New Yorker?
It was the New Yorker. If you go to thenewyorker.com right now, you can read the story.
So an actual highfalutin, highbrow mainstream magazine did a cool story on gaming. Very cool.
Okay, so
that's increasingly common, by the way.
Yeah.
I think it's got an excellent highly recommended story.
Yeah, well, especially when you have like someone like Will Wright, who just lends himself to like intelligent conversation about like just beyond just game theory, about just life in general. I mean, okay, anyway, so here's the quote. Will has a reality distortion field around him, his former business partner Jeff Braun told The New Yorker. He comes up with the craziest idea you've ever heard, and when he's finished explaining it to you, the world looks crazy and he's the only sane person in it. And you know what?
That's a pretty spot on description. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not going to steal any more thunder from The New Yorker. Go read the story. It's awesome.
So we're just, like, pimping other
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, but that's okay.
Well, you got to give props where they're due.
You do have to give props where they're due.
That's good.
Especially when you hate everybody as much as we
and,
do.
It's such a mistake. There's and some
just,
love, too.
I'm just going to throw out a couple of the quick ones, just quick news stories. So in the past, we've kind of made, at least I made fun of Kuma Reality Games for kind of making war games based off of conflicts in Iraq and Iran and whatnot. And they are partnering with the History Channel for their show, what the hell's the name of the show? Shootout. So basically starting this Friday, they're going to have their shows which recreate basically famous battles, mm-hmm. which range from the Iwo Jima to the Battle of the Bulge, the Tet Offensive. And Kuma Reality Games is going to have a 3D recreation game of that, of each episode of their show at the same time. So it's a totally, from what I understand, it's a free thing you can just check out.
That's pretty cool.
So it is kind of cool. I mean, hopefully it'll play out well. So
so that's a nice TV game convergence thing going on there.
So viewers of the show can log on to history.com and download the online game for free immediately after each episode airs. Mm-hmm. So it's tying it all together.
We'll have to see if it's any good, but in theory, that's a neat idea.
What the hell is this? It says using heavy 3D CGI animation sequences.
Yeah, I don't know.
Players can experience the thick of battle from the point of view of the historical participants.
Well, I think that's a TV show.
Right. So it's like...
So that's the TV show.
Why not just... Let's show what footage we have, you know, and other things. You know, what's the point of the?
Yeah, I think the Kuma War game is not telegenic. Well, I think. Well,
I mean,
I think it's
pretty.
Well, we'll see on Friday, I guess.
Yeah, we'll have to see.
But
let's
watch
after Battlestar
Let's
Galactica.
Do it.
So I mean, like, so apparently the first one, it's an Iwo Jima episode, game episode, as they're calling it. You'll see through the eyes of a U.S. Marine single-handedly overrunning a heavily fortified bunker complex by hand carrying an aircraft machine gun into battle. Which apparently is a true story.
Are you laughing? Is war funny to you?
Yeah, it's hilarious. It just seems like one of those. It's like
let's just wait for it. Only three health packs.
Exactly. I'm like reading this, thinking of Wolfenstein 3D. I'm like, how realistic is this? But you know, if it happens,
maybe there'll
be
secret doors like in Wolfenstein.
I sure hope so. So you know what? There you go. Little freebie shout out. And you know what? Hell, I'm not even gonna bother talking about Postal 3 because oh god, they're actually making it.
They're making it for Xbox 360 and the PC with the Source engine.
Oh, good. That's important. So, you know what?
Maybe this time, third time will be the charm here.
That's right. Maybe they'll actually not get 0 stars this time.
They like the 0 stars.
Well, of course. We totally played into their hands on that one.
Right.
I mean, I would have given them a 0.5 just to piss them off.
The 0 was a badge of honor.
Yeah.
Well, it works in the same way. Like, if a movie that is intentionally supposed to be low budget schlock and it gets like a C, it's like eh. But if it gets like an F or an F minus, you're like, yeah, we got something here.
There was some movie a little while ago that did that. They took all the bad quotes and they put it on the front in their ad.
Well, I remember David Lynch put Siskel and Ebert's two thumbs down on the Lost Highway poster.
Did they really?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Awesome.
We got it. We got to start doing that. Like, you know, when we give a game a bad review, let's suggest they use this quote. You know, you won't play a worse game all year, GFW.
Tough choice. This game or syphilis?
Ouch.
Just
that hurts.
Indifferent.
All right. Are we done with the cranky this week's cranky podcast?
I don't think
do we want to read some do some reader questions?
We got some.
Do we have some?
We have a couple.
How long have we been podcasting here, Mr. Miller?
Hour and 15.
Holy crap. We're out of control this week.
We totally are.
Wow. It's wacky. Okay, how about a reader quote or two? Just have it not be about review scores. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Well, Ryan. It's about reviews, but not about scores.
All right.
Ryan, no.
What? Is it not complaining about what we said about a game?
No. Not at all.
Okay.
It's just asking
I'm weary of that at the moment.
Okay. No, it's a good question. Okay, Almond asks, does the deadline in your case ever take away the fun and pleasure of playing games, be it short-term even?
That's a great question.
I can imagine that you're reviewing this one terrific game, but knowing there are two more games to be reviewed, you kind of have to hurry through the whole ordeal.
That is a great question, and I wrestle with this all the time.
Yeah. We've talked about it.
Yeah, we have talked about this. It's tough.
Oh.
Well, just that, like, for the most part, we're pretty fortunate here in that no single one of us ever reviews that many games.
Right.
In
but
an
even
issue.
One, like, one long game, if I'm playing, like, I have to make sure I'm not getting frustrated just because I need to hurry because I know I still need to write it.
Right.
Wednesday's coming. And
well, I think part of it is there's some games that just aren't meant to be rushed through. You have to, like, you know, take a sip every once in a while. You play a little bit, you walk away, you come back later.
Yeah.
And your experience differs, too, because of it. Like, I was talking about Condemned. It was like, I quite enjoyed it playing it on my own free time, and you know where the complaints were that it was super short, mm-hmm. and it was monotonous. It was like I never played more than a level at a time, mm-hmm. but I played it over you know, over the course of a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I had sat down, and I know I would have probably done the whole game in a 5-hour sitting, it would have been monotonous.
That almost raises a question. Do you think you should just play a game like one level at a time? Like you finish a level, okay, I'm done. That's like, it's like an episode of a show. I'm going to walk away.
Just an impossible question to answer. Because tons of gamers play it that way too.
Right.
They'll rush through it.
Because
all at once.
I always, with the Half-Life game, I always try to do it in one setting. I always just, because I really want to keep playing. Mm-hmm. But like Condemned in that case, it was just like so. Like the environment was just so oppressive, and it was
intense.
So
you gotta, like get
intense
away from
that
it.
Like I just didn't want to like, you know, fray my nerves anymore with.
That's a good question.
That's a great question. There's no easy answer for it.
There really isn't. It's just one of the many things that we have to try to keep in mind when we're trying to be objective when we write.
It's important to just know that we are thinking of that when we are.
I will definitely step away if I'm feeling like I'm getting annoyed only because I need to rush. I will walk away from the computer because that's not fair.
I would say the danger is like more significant at, you know, for some freelancers and then other outlets, you know, like when I was at Electronic Gaming Monthly, I would sometimes review like 10 games in a month.
Yeah.
And that's when it really becomes, then you really have to watch it because you're like, especially at the beginning of the cycle, you're like, okay, here's game number one. I've got nine more of these things to do. And like, if you start dying more than 2 times on something, you really just get furious, and you've got to check yourself and say, all right.
I feel your pain. I remember when I was doing that for EGM as well. I was just like, I had a stack of games, and I remember killing, like, it was a Labor Day weekend, and I just had, like, this, I'm like, I kept, like, getting stuck at a point. I just crap onto the next game, and I would come back later. And it was
that's the difference. But that's when I envy, like, you know, music and movie critics, where you can, if you put 3 hours of investment into watching it, you've got 3 hours worth of progress into it.
Yeah.
You know, there's no guarantees like that with a game, with games for us. You might spend 6 hours accomplishing what someone else accomplished in an hour for whatever reason, you know?
Right. And exactly. Different play styles for different games.
God, our jobs are hard.
It's not hard, but
well,
I think
it is.
No, I know what you're saying.
It is different, you know. I mean, there's nothing difficult. I mean, there's nothing hard or whatever about it. But just in comparison to some other, you know, entertainment mediums.
No, I know what you're saying.
It's unique to gaming, I think.
It is very unique to gaming.
That's the problem of having an open world or kind of a blank slate you can walk around in for a while.
Yeah. Oh, our time might be up if somebody's... No, he walked away.
And we scared him off.
Scary looking guy at the door. Do we have another reader question before we sign out?
There's one more. It's not as good, but
well, don't say that. You're going to hurt the guy's feelings.
Okay, it's great. It's awesome. Okay. Actually, he even says it himself. Gamut 10 says, I have a real question.
Okay.
This is a real question.
All right.
Why don't consoles seem to suffer from pirated games as much as PC games do? I mean, a CD or DVD is the same, and the data is just ones and zeros. I know tons of people that pirate PC games for shame, but nobody I know copies or uses pirated console games. Why is this?
Because of the consoles themselves. They have special plants that process the CD, game discs.
Right.
So you have to, in order to...
You have to mod your console.
You have to basically modify and all your warranty and get a chip and put
it in
there.
And a PC is just an open system.
And then the sacrifice, this is actually another story I'm sure that like maybe one of yours podcasts will be talking about right now, is that... like Microsoft has just voided a load of Live accounts because they detected that people had modified their 360s. Mm-hmm. And so the sacrifice there is that, hey, you can burn DVDs and play pirated games on there, but you can't play
them online.
Yeah, so
that sucks. That's
so even for the people, because it's different. You know, on a PC, it's like you do whatever. You do a little Googling, and you can get yourself into a position where you technically have access to certain things. Mm-hmm. Whereas, again, you have to do the Googling to find where you can get a chip. Then you have to know how to modify it. You have to have some, you know, soldering skills and this and that. Then you have to be willing to risk, like I said.
There's a lot more hoops.
That's a lot of work just to be a jerk.
Right. I mean, in any case, pirating something, you're just shitting on your industry. It's like, as old as like the old infomercials and the raps about, you know, don't copy that floppy. It's like, the bottom line is true. It's like,
is that your rap saying don't copy that floppy?
Then don't fucking steal them.
It is true.
Because it's not going to be profitable for people to keep making them, you know, and that's just, it's simple logic. And in that case, the bromide, don't copy that floppy. That's some sound wisdom.
That is true.
Dude.
So don't copy that.
Is there actually a rap song, Don't Copy That Floppy?
Yeah, I'll put it up on...
I need that.
It's actually... it's got an intermission with some developers from Neverwinter Nights talking in it and whatnot, too.
Man, I need a remix on that shit.
I'll put it on the forums.
Nice.
Cool. All right, I think we're going to sign off here. Thank you all for sitting in on this extra-long podcast, and I think there was some happy times along with all the bitter times.
A little bit of both.
A little bit of both. That's what you get for dragging us into the studio at 10 a.m.
You'll pay.
All right. So we will be back next week. And stay tuned and keep looking on iTunes and on our forum for the extra special Jeff Butler interview. And otherwise, we will be back next week. Thank y'all.
Peace out. Don't copy that, Floppy.